Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, the word to describe how the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities Convention went in Regina last week was productive. We'll hear from SARM President Ray Orb, who also made another noteworthy announcement at that convention on Friday. The convention was also the topic of discussion for the SaskAgToday.com roundtable on Friday with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch. He commented on the SARM convention, also talked a little bit about some of the other events that happened last week, including the Crop Opportunities Conference in Swift Current and the rise of canola prices. Canada ranks number 3 in the world for herbicide-resistant weeds, only behind the United States and Australia. There's been an extensive survey done a few years ago, but more work needs to be done. We'll hear from Charles Geddes, who is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and he will be leading the herbicide-resistant weed survey in Saskatchewan. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. The word to describe how the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities Convention went in Regina last week was productive. That assessment came from SARM President Ray Orb, who believes delegates took full advantage of things like the dialogue sessions and the bear pit session to ask provincial cabinet ministers questions about issues that matter in their local RMs. Speaking on Friday ahead of the AGM, Orb believes the organization is in a good position.
As far as our, the financial position of SARM, actually we had a very good year last year. We have a lot of participation from our membership in different programs, and those programs actually have done fairly well. We offer some really good insurance programs that are really competitive, and some are actually probably top notch compared to what's offered throughout the province or in other provinces. But yeah, definitely we have a fairly large staff, and we have a really good staff, and our staff are paid competitive wages, and so I think we have a year that is going to be well received. The report will be well received compared to the prior year where things weren't quite as good. We had some downturn in some of the investments we do, and we invest some of the money. We try to get the best returns we can, so we have to make sure that that funding is available to provide the services that our members require.
Orb says the Lake Diefenbaker Irrigation Project announcement from Premier Scott Moe was one of the highlights of the convention. On another note, Orb says more work needs to be done to address infrastructure funding for RMs.
Hoping we hear something in the budget next week about our IRG program. So that's the road infrastructure program, roads and bridges. Still an issue for us, and we've asked the province for more funding. I mentioned that in my opening address on Wednesday morning that we're asking for more funding, and we're hoping we get that because we just simply need to have more funding available. The cost of doing road and bridge projects has gone up due to inflation, and if our members can't get access to more funding, then our infrastructure will deteriorate. And we have some areas of our RMs where the infrastructure is starting to deteriorate, and we have to make sure that we continue that lobby. So we're hopeful for next Wednesday as well.
One of the 27 resolutions discussed at the convention that got a considerable amount of attention was related to carbon dioxide, or CO2. 95% of members voted in favor of the resolution, saying CO2 is the building block of life and fuels, and to call it a pollutant is disingenuous. When asked if this resolution carries any weight at a time when the federal government is implementing policies to reduce emissions, or believes they do.
Well, it makes a really strong statement, I think, you know, when you get 95% of your voting delegates saying that, you know, we need to oppose this federal net zero policy. Of course, we need to talk to the province. So we'll start with our environment minister here in Saskatchewan. Minister Chow will want to meet with her. What we do is we send the resolutions off that are passed, first of all, to the ministers, but this is when we're going to want to meet with her in person on telling the province that we are concerned about this. We don't think that we should have policies like this because if we're so concerned about CO2, we don't believe that it is harmful as the federal government is telling us. And of course, then we're going to need to lobby the federal government too. And we did try to meet with our federal environment minister last October. However, we did not acquire a meeting with them, and that was very concerning to us because, of course, we saw the minister in Ottawa, but we were told he wasn't available. So it's something that the federal government has pushed on every province. They pushed it on Saskatchewan, and now we're starting to push back, and we're hopeful that some common sense will dictate to the federal government they need to revise some of these policies. We're watching the polls like everyone else is, and we're seeing that the federal government is not doing too well in the polls, so perhaps they might want to reconsider some of their policies, and they might want to meet with us the next time we ask.
It was also mentioned at the convention that Ray Orb is not seeking re-election as president of SARM and will be finishing up his term in 2025. Orb has been president since 2015. It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, AgriView.
Drought in Alberta is stretching into its fourth year, and farmers and oil companies are planning for water restrictions that threaten production of wheat, beef, and crude. The severe conditions have prompted Alberta to open water-sharing negotiations among license holders for the first time in two decades, hoping to salvage output from two of its biggest industries. Alberta, which relies on melting snow and precipitation for most of its water supply, has allocated water since 1894. That system prioritizes those who have held licenses the longest, although holders rarely exercise that right. Alberta's water talks underline the difficult compromises facing resource-rich regions adapting to extreme weather. Hydrologists say the future will bring Alberta more rain instead of snow due to climate change, which will strain summer water supplies. A union representing striking workers in Halifax says it stopped a CN train in Winnipeg Thursday as part of escalations against that company. Unifor says it safely stopped the train at a rail crossing at a public roadway near CN's Winnipeg Yards, where close to 100 Unifor members and supporters were holding a demonstration. Workers at Autoport, a CN-operated transshipping hub at the port of Halifax, began their strike on February 27th, according to a news release from Unifor. Unifor Local 100 represents 239 workers at that facility. Unifor says it stopped the train as a protest after CN brought in replacement workers to work at the Halifax facility. It said some cars loaded onto trains by these replacement workers end up in Winnipeg, where they're stored before delivery elsewhere in North America. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 56% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 32, a notable deterioration from the 67% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 31. CN saw a significant decline in performance, while CPKC saw modest deterioration as compared to the prior week. In supplying 56% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 32, CN saw performance deteriorate from the 74% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 31. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the 10th consecutive week. CPKC performance declined slightly from the prior week, with the railway supplying 56% of shipper orders in Week 32 as compared to 58% in the prior week. CPKC performance remains below the 90% threshold for the eighth consecutive week. The owners of a farm-to-fork all-natural meat business in Saskatchewan cite difficulties finding skilled labor in the meat business, as well as the threat of avian flu in poultry, as reasons for closing after nearly 30 years of business. Production at Pineview Farms near Warman, which is owned by Melanie and Kevin Bolt, will come to an end when their inventory runs out. Melanie Bolt says the decision to close follows a lot of analysis and decision-making about the future of the business, as well as their stage of life and personal plans for the future. She says she hopes customers will come in for one last visit and to stock up their freezers. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency says it has revoked two poultry control zone orders in British Columbia. It says the measure was invoked in premises in Abbotsford and Chilliwack in November after detecting outbreaks of the highly contagious bird flu. Both control zones were officially ended Saturday, with the agency saying this happens when post-outbreak surveillance determines there are no more cases of avian flu found. The CFIA website says there were 13 infected sites in BC as of March 5th and 145 previously infected sites that have affected more than 6 million birds. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it's free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return in 60 seconds' time. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and plus 3 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. The Western College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan is studying the connection between animal welfare, management decisions, and business sustainability. Dr. Yolande Seddon is the NSERC Industrial Research Chair in Swine Welfare. Her team of four research scientists and technicians will study data gathered from interviews with producers making management decisions, as well as herd vets in Canada and the United States.
The outcome of this work is that we aim to produce a tool that will support on-farm decision-making surrounding decisions that will influence animal welfare, but also with the knowledge of how it interacts with business profitability and environmental emissions, and therefore overall business sustainability goals that could influence market access.
The 75-minute interview covers a wide range of topics.
We ask about their understanding of animal welfare and what does animal welfare mean to them, and also to get an idea about what indicators they use to monitor animal welfare and what's important to themselves or the company they work for. We also ask questions about aspects of animal management and how, in their experience, they consider it relates to animal welfare and production and also other business sustainability goals, including how this impacts staff well-being.
Seddon says data gathered from the interviews will not only be used in this study, but in future research as well.
An additional benefit of these interviews that we see is coming out. It is enabling us to actually capture the first-hand experiences of the industry in managing and making decisions over animal welfare, including a number of things that are quite challenging to put in practice. This is simply not being captured in scientific literature, and it's really valuable to hear the industry's side of the story on this because it's typically not heard.
And she explains how the results will be used.
this information will be distributed, firstly, those who are participating in the interviews, we have already agreed that we would provide them with the tool and show them a demonstration. Additionally, we will be publishing the work and presenting it also at pork producer meetings. But a further component of this work is that once we have started to develop the tool, we will be wanting to go and validate it and test it on farms. And we expect this to be done later in 2024 in order to have a final tool ready in early 2025.
Dr. Yolande Seddon is the NSERC Industrial Research Chair in Swine Welfare. She's based in Saskatoon at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April closed at 188.57 today. That's up 132. June live cattle closed at 185.40, up 180. April feeder cattle closed at 255.10, up 297. May feeder cattle closed at 259.12, up 312. April lean hogs closed at 86.82, down 10. May lean hogs closed at 93.42, up 25. And that's the livestock market conditions. Well, the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities held its annual convention in Regina last week. That's where the Saskatchewan government announced they would be moving ahead with the expansion of the Lake Diefenbaker Irrigation Project. That was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch.
That's something long awaited. The province announced some years ago, that it was wanting to go ahead with irrigation expansion out of Lake Diefenbaker, and there's been a lot of environmental work done and groundwork laid, and they've made some progress on infill and getting some more irrigation acres established. But now they've committed some significant money that will have to be shared with producers, and the feds have not to this point come on. But there is a commitment to move ahead in earnest after many, many years of Lake Diefenbaker not being fully utilized. And I know there are some people out there that say, oh, gosh, all this irrigation, we won't have enough water. We lose more to evaporation out of Lake Diefenbaker than we're using for irrigation. And if we really did have a water shortage, irrigation would be what the tap we turned off so that municipal water supplies would be available. So some of those fears are really ungrounded, but they'll have to show the statistics. They'll have to prove to the population that this is worth it for the higher value of crops, the drought proofing, the value added that it can bring. But it's a jewel. It's a marvelous resource sitting in the middle of the province. Not everybody's going to be able to tap into it, but a lot of producers will. And with the price of land, adding irrigation to make that land more productive is just the way to go.
He also talked about the resolution passed by SARM delegates calling for the Saskatchewan government to implement a wolf and coyote predation program.
I think it's got a good possibility of doing that. I know in other areas of the province, it's coyotes rather than wolves that can be a real predation problem. And I'm not sure where a few years ago, I believe we had a bounty on coyotes. And I'm not even sure just exactly what they're asking on the wolf program, because I imagine the SAS Crop Insurance administers wildlife predation insurance. You don't even have to be insured with SAS Crop Insurance to get that. So I'm not quite clear on what they're asking.
Hirsch believes the province will take a closer look at the issue.
Certainly, the SARM convention certainly flagged it as a big problem. It received some attention, so I imagine it will now be more on government radar.
He notes he attended the Cropportunities Conference in Swift Current last week.
Yeah, I put on annually and everything from some market analysis to some analysis of where fertilizer prices may be going. I got to give a presentation on costs, returns, and strategies that I enjoyed very much, and I had a chance to interview the senior fertilizer trader with Federated Co-op, and not to a big surprise, this is the time of year when it typically happens, but in the last 6 weeks, nitrogen prices and phosphate prices have been increasing. And there's quite an expectation that there will be a reset after seeding is complete and prices will come down quite dramatically. That also leads retailers to not want to have any extra fertilizer more than they can avoid on hand for to be a part of that price drop. So just something for producers to be aware of, that if the price may continue to go up, there may also be a good chance in the summertime or early fall to stock up on needs for the following year if you have fertilizer storage space available.
Hirsch then talked about the rise in canola prices last week.
In my part of the province, I'm seeing canola prices of not far off $14 a bushel cash price. And of course, we're down in the southwest, not really that close to any canola crushing plant that typically pays better than the export market. And I also saw a new crop bid for canola that was at $14 a bushel in this part of the province. So certainly a substantial improvement. And if you could answer with certainty where prices are going from here, it would be worth a lot of money to producers.
He also commented on last week's Saskatchewan spring runoff report.
And again, I'm in that dry southwest corner. We didn't get nearly the snow that Saskatoon and North Battleford received, maybe 6 inches. But here, spring runoff has started. We've had some pretty warm days. At my farm, I had a new dugout put in last fall, and I've been crossing my fingers, was there going to be enough runoff or any runoff? And just checked it today, 2 days ago, there was nothing in the dugout. Checked it today, and the dugout is full. And the two subsidiary old dugouts, I think, are going to get filled up as well. So surprising that with a fairly little bit of snow that we had, that we are seeing some water running, at least in this part of the world. That may not be true in all parts of southwest Saskatchewan, but certainly is more dugouts filled than I would have thought.
Hirsch then went into Farm Credit Canada's Farmland Value Survey released last week, which shows that Saskatchewan had the highest jump, while Manitoba was third highest.
I was a little bit surprised, but we're dealing with 2023 numbers when commodity prices still looked very buoyant, and a 15% increase in values year over year in Saskatchewan is very substantial. I think it was 11.1% in Manitoba. The truth will be in the pudding as to what happens in 2024 as commodity prices have ground lower. Also interesting to note that, yes, prices can go down. BC had a drop of 3% in their farmland prices, including a drop in the zone of the Peace River region, which is mainly grain and cattle farming. So grain prices or land prices indeed can go down. If you look up the FCC report, it's also interesting because they break Saskatchewan into zones. West Central had the slowest increase in prices. But Northeast and East Central Saskatchewan, where you guys have been able to grow some really good crops, they were above the 15% provincial average increase. So it really did depend a little bit upon which production zone you're in.
Andy says it will be interesting to see what this Wednesday's Saskatchewan budget holds when it comes to agriculture.
I'm not sure with all of these pre-announcements like Lake Diefenbaker and funding for education whether there's going to be much new left to announce by the time the budget rolls out, but we'll have to watch and see what that might have for agriculture as well.
That's Kevin Hirsch. He is the chief agricultural editor for SaskAgToday.com. Please stay tuned. I'll have your commodities update coming up right after these messages.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed up in the nearby months today. May canola closed at $6.31.70, up $1.10. July canola closed at $6.41.30, up $1.20. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.50.75. That's up 4.25 cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.73.75. Up 7.5 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at 542 and three quarters. That's up 14 and a quarter cents. May corn closed at 436 per bushel, down three quarters of a cent. May soybeans closed at 1187 and three quarters, down 10 and a half cents. May oats closed at 358 and a half, down 7 and a quarter cents. And that's the commodities update. Canada ranks number 3 in the world for herbicide-resistant weeds, only behind the United States and Australia. The last extensive survey in Saskatchewan occurred in 2019-2020 and estimated producer losses due to herbicide-resistant weeds at $340 million per year. It found that green foxtail, volunteer canola, wild oats, wild buckwheat, and kochia were the biggest concerns. The top instance of herbicide resistance in Saskatchewan 5 years ago was Group 1 resistance in wild oats. Herbicide resistance wild oat was found in 77% of 250 fields where wild oat was collected and tested. Charles Geddes is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada and will be leading the herbicide-resistant weed survey in Saskatchewan. He spoke a couple of weeks ago at the Top Crop Summit in Saskatoon.
We have funding to do the herbicide-resistant weed surveys in Saskatchewan over 2024 and 2025, surveying fields both pre-harvest and post-harvest. Pre-harvest survey covering a whole range of resistant weeds. The post-harvest survey typically just focuses on kochia and Russian thistle. And so the way these surveys are set up, they're randomly selected fields. When a field is randomly selected, we contact the farmer and get land access permission from the farmer to include their field in the survey. Throughout the summer here, moving forward, we will be contacting farmers to ask for land access permission. So we're looking forward to seeing the new status of herbicide resistance in the province.
He tells us how they decide which fields are surveyed.
It's essentially done by a computer where it's a random selection of quarter sections. Quarter sections are linked to the landowner, and then that's how we contact the landowner.
Geddy says most landowners are receptive to the survey.
Generally they are. We do provide some valuable information back to the farmer, right? So doing these, especially for the resistance side, doing these resistance tests, it costs $100 per a sample and herbicide combination. So we're testing a whole suite of herbicides on a whole range of weed species, and then we're giving this information back to the farmer for that specific field. So it really helps them understand what types of herbicide resistance they're dealing with at essentially no cost to them. And the information in the end is all aggregated together just to keep everything at a level where, I mean, you won't be pinpointing back to an individual field, for example.
He says they will be doing about the same amount of tests as last time.
Yeah, so we will be doing a similar number of fields. So we're targeting 200 fields pre-harvest, 200 post-harvest in 2024, and then the same thing but different fields in 2025.
Geddes speculates on which weeds will be issues this year.
Yeah, so I mean, some of this stuff is relatively easy to predict. Things like wild oat, it's an issue across the prairies, both group 1 and 2 resistance. It's been an issue for a few decades now, and something that's certainly increasing. On the grass side, green foxtail, especially group 1 resistance there. And I mean, group 2 resistance is lower, but it is increasing. For other broadleaf weeds, I mean, kochia is a prime example, but some of those pigweeds and other broadleaf weeds resistant to group 2 products are increasing as well.
He puts a dollar value on losses caused by herbicide-resistant weeds back in 2019-2020.
It was $340 million annually as a cost to farmers in Saskatchewan. And so this is the estimated cost of decreased crop yields and quality, and then also the increased cost of weed control to manage these issues.
Geddes is certain the number will be higher this year.
It's fairly safe to assume that it will be higher. We're expecting that the percentages of resistance will have increased slightly since the past survey, right? So it makes sense that the cost has increased as well.
He says it's difficult to say if drier conditions over the past few years will have an impact this year.
It certainly would have an impact, and the impact would likely vary depending on the species, right? But the impact is not always in the same direction. So lack of moisture over the last few years, it results in lower efficacy of herbicides, right? And typically that means that weeds that are surviving, a greater percentage of those will actually be susceptible weeds compared with resistant ones, right? And so in that way, it actually may be mitigating resistance. But then you also have to think about weeds like kochia, for example, that really thrive in those dry conditions, and that's why we've been seeing kochia, and particularly herbicide-resistant kochia, becoming such an issue over the past about half decade when we've been in this really dry spell.
And Geddes tells us how long it will take to crunch all the numbers.
It usually takes about a year to finish off all of the whole plant bioassays that we're using to screen these populations for resistance after we actually collect the samples from the field. So if we finish our field sampling in 2025, we can expect the maps and everything to be ready in 2026.
Charles Geddes is a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. He will lead a herbicide-resistant weed survey in Saskatchewan this fall and next spring. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Canadian Association of Farm Advisors is presenting a Parkland Learning event this Wednesday, March 20th, from 9 until 10:30 at the Community Futures Ventures office at 204 Smith Street East in Yorkton. However, if you do want to participate, today is the deadline. You must RSVP to Denise at philipchuckmanagement.com. The panel discussion will be on farm financial planning. One of the speakers will be Monty Taphorn. He's been working with TD Bank since 1999 in various roles within agriculture services, and he's a relationship manager with TD Yorkton Agriculture Services. His current position as a relationship manager in the area focuses on helping farm and agribusiness customers and prospects reach their financial goals using a suite of specialized financial products and services. He can tailor competitive lending solutions to match the requirements of your farm or agribusiness. Monty understands agriculture and the specific needs of cattle operations, supply-managed operations, and cash crop operations, from day-to-day financing of working capital, machinery, equipment, quota, or real estate requirements. He can help you choose products and services that best meet your unique agriculture, dairy, or cash crop business needs. The other person will be on the panel discussion is Denise Philipchuck of Philipchuck Management. She's developed a keen interest for agriculture on the family farm in the Swan River Valley of Western Manitoba, growing into a passion for providing farmers and farm families with valuable and unbiased advice and information they need to confidently make decisions with peace of mind. As a farm management consultant and coach, a certified financial planner, a certified workplace mediator, a member and Parkland chapter chair of the Canadian Association of Farm Advisors, and a past farm debt mediation service financial expert, Denise provides financial planning and management consulting services, tools, and coaching to farm families, helping them become more successful in their businesses, relationships, and lives. So that's coming up on Wednesday. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, partly to mainly sunny, winds west-northwest at 20 to 40, and a high of plus 5. For tonight, becoming cloudy, winds north-northwest at 20 to 40, and a low of minus 7. For tomorrow, early cloud, then sunshine, winds north-northwest at 15 to 30, a high of minus 5, an overnight low of minus 21. For Wednesday, partly to mainly sunny. Winds north-northwest at 10 to 20, a high of minus 9. For Thursday, partly sunny with a 20% chance of evening flurries, also a high of minus 9. And for Friday, partly sunny, a high of minus 8. In the Paw and Dauphin, it's plus 3 degrees, Swan River plus 1, Brandon 0. Shoal Lake Russell minus 2, Roblin minus 1. Regina is at plus 8, Saskatoon plus 3, Hudson Bay plus 6, Broadview Mooseman plus 4, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington plus 5. The Yorkton-Melville region has a sunny sky, a west wind at 17 kilometers an hour. 72% is the relative humidity. The temperature is plus 3 degrees. And that's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg today. For today, be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.